Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of October 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. We'll explore the expansion in the beef market and the cure for high prices there with Chris Hurt at Purdue University. And we'll also take up the weather forecast, that with the guys up in Chicago that belong to Earth Risk Technologies. And that all happens during this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I hear the way the numbers finished up in Chicago. December contract in the corn pit up 4 3/4 at $3.84.5. The March at $3.93.5, up 4 3/4 as well. May up 4 3/4 at $3.99.5, and July at $4.03 3/4, up 4 3/4. December contract at $4.08, a nickel higher that in the corn pit. Futures in the soybeans down today, down 10.5 at $8.85 in the lead November. January at $8.84.5, 11.5 lower. The March at $8.86 3/4, down 11.5, and July down 10 3/4 at $8.96 1/4. November beans of next year at $8.86.5, down 10.5. cents. Bean meal down $2.90 at $3.02.20, and the bean oil at $27.78, finished 79 cents lower. December soft red winter wheat up 18.5 cents at $5.09. July at $5.21 1/4, also up 18, and was up 18 1/4. Hard red July at $5.27 1/2, 16 3/4 higher. Feeder cattle finished at $193.60 in the October, down $1.45. November at $190.77 1/2, $2.47 1/2 cents lower. October feeder cattle at $139.15. They're actually still trading at $1.87 1/2 lower. December at $141.80, down $1.60. And lean hogs for the day, 57 1/2 cents lower at $63.02 1/2. In the December, February at $65.95 for the lean hogs, down 20 cents. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. There you'll find links to our Farm Assets Conference at farmassetsconference.com and a way to purchase your tickets. It's just $20, rather $30, and that comes up on the 24th day of November, which is the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. Hope to see you there.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's check some of the outside markets. December crude oil now trading 60 cents a barrel lower at $44. Ethanol futures at $1.60 1/10. That's a 2 1/10 of a cent higher. Gasoline on the wholesale price, the RBOB at $1.28 8/10. That's down 1 1/2 cents. And heating oil or diesel fuel is 2 7/10 lower at $1.42 6/10 of a cent per gallon. Natural gas for the day is down 20 6/10 at $2.08 even. The outside markets, Dow Jones Industrial Average down 10 points at 17,538. U.S. dollar at 96.96, down 0.278. And gold futures on the afternoon at $1,164.25, $1.45 higher. The weather forecast says sunny skies and 68 today. A 20% chance of rain after 1 in the a.m. this evening. Increasing clouds, a low of 48 tonight. An east wind at about 10 miles an hour. And then tomorrow it will rain, they say. A high of 58 degrees in the Urbana-Champaign area. East winds at 10 to 15, gusting to 23. And Tuesday, a low of 53 on an east-southeast wind at 9 to 15, gusting to 23. Chance of rainfall on Tuesday night, 100%. Wednesday, a 30% chance of rain, mostly cloudy and a high of 63. Breezy with a west-southwest wind at 9 to 14. Now, here are the things that are important. We've got a little rainfall in the ground, some moisture to keep things cool. Cool temperatures at night, you bet. Wednesday night, 39. Thursday night, 35. Friday night, 38. Saturday night, 46. Anhydrous ammonia next week.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's check how things finished up in Chicago with a bit of analysis from Kurt Kimmel here on the closing market report for the 26th day of October. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we talked this morning about what you thought was some spread unwinding between the wheat and the soybeans in particular, and apparently it continued throughout the day. Do you have a better handle on what really did happen there?
Well, going into midday, that's about what everybody else came up to. I don't know if they were listening to our conversation this morning or not. I didn't hear anybody had any better idea. They had funds buying over 8,000 contracts of wheat, 8,700 contracts of corn. They sold about 4,900 contracts of beans. The only other twist was the commodity fund short position on commitment to traders report was a little larger than what they thought, and thought the funds were a little too short the marketplace, and so that's what's kind of fueled that there. And it's kind of same thing in the corn, thought the corn position's out a little bit, so maybe a little position evening here as we start to roll into a month end. But that spread has actually been fairly popular for some time. It's just that they decided to get her to move all at once. You know, the fundamental news was bullish, positive the wheat, you know, low negative the beans, and you know, low constructive corn. You know, corn-wise, we're seeing a little firmer golf basis here this week, and a little bit more push here to secure corn inventories, because basically harvest is wrapping up. We'll probably see corn harvest near 77% complete here this afternoon, beans, you know, in the upper 80s. And, you know, particularly corn guys are, you know, electing to, you know, stack it outside there and kind of sit on it here with the idea that this grain market in general can hold together here as we move into Thanksgiving at least.
So we have wheat in the ground for the most part in the western Corn Belt, soft red winter wheat in the ground here in the state of Illinois, parts of Missouri, some of Indiana as well. We have a little rally in that marketplace. You suggested that if they're unwinding spreads, this could take a couple of days, maybe up to three, for it to happen. Are there any opportunities for producers to price out wheat? And if there were, should they actually do that, given what you see on the world weather front?
Well, I'd be a little patient in through here. There's not a whole lot of hurry as a producer. It's hard to get producers to price a whole lot up front, just the uncertainty of green up in the spring, winter kill. When you look at the wheat chart particularly, we've just kind of been old crop December here. We've just been sort of grinding sideways ever since clear back last May. The chart is attempting to build a head and shoulders bottom. When you look at the wheat chart, December, if we happen to pop out this 530 area, we could maybe get some aggressive additional fund buying take place. But we got to take one step at a time. You know, as far as actually wanting to go ahead and price new crop, I'd say in this new crop July futures contract up towards that 545 level might be a spot to give it. But producers are going to be kind of hesitant to do anything there. I'd be more inclined to establish a price floor on a move up to that level. That way you've got some flexibility to zig and zag here. We see some fireworks develop here later on this winter.
So you just told me that technically we were building maybe a head and shoulders bottom for the wheat market. There are some who have speculated that wheat may be able to lead corn higher and that would lead the grains in Chicago, period. Do you think that'll be the case?
It could very well. It's going to be awful hard to have corn market take charge. I know we're seeing some demand come forward, but these are kind of old numbers. But, you know, when you look at the big picture on corn, there's over 10 billion bushels for sale. But on the other hand, there's about 8.7 billion bushels to be bought under the market. So kind of feel that corn approaches $4 level, we're going to see producer selling kind of kick in to keep a lid on things. But on breaks, we'll have some end users continue to gather inventory. So corn's kind of a sideways higher here for a little while. Beans is going to hinge on South American weather here as we get into November. But as you mentioned, wheat, there's ample supplies worldwide. But these weather conditions continue to be a concern here as we move through the winter. It could be the market to kind of say giddy up and go.
Any reason to talk about the live cattle futures for the day? They've been tickling around the $140 level, have rallied fairly nicely over the recent weeks or so. Are they on the top end of the marketplace?
We kind of feel decent up around this 145, 146 level. Might catch you here for a while. We're seeing situation in pasture. Well, it's not underwater. You know, they got some moisture to work with out west. The thing is, we got to kind of watch export news in through here. Exports has kind of been a beneficial there last winter and last spring, kind of slowed down somewhat, but that's going to kind of be the key in through here as we move into the early winter months.
Kurt, thanks so much.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel, of course, is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. Please do visit our website at willag.org. I'd like to urge you to buy a ticket to our Farm Assets Conference that's coming up in November. It's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving, the 24th day. This is a brand new event in its second year. Last year was a great event. If you know anybody that came or you came, you probably ought to pick up your ticket. They're just $30. We'll go through big data with John Jansen, who you'll probably be familiar with, at least FieldView, if not being owned by Monsanto Company and Climate Corporation. And not just a sales pitch, of course. We'll go in more depth about what big data really is, and your chance to ask questions of these folks. Bruce Sherrick will be there to go through land values. He's with the Farmland Investment Center upstairs here in the Urbana-Champaign campus, College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Science. Gary Schnitke as well. And we'll take up our regular panel of analysts to take a look at commodity markets. Should be a great day in Normal, Illinois on the 24th day of November. That's at the Marriott Hotel. You can find all the details at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com, or you can just buy your ticket if you want to right now at either of those places online or by dialing this number, 217-898-1065. That's 898-1065. It's an 800 number. One more time, 898-1065. In today's agricultural news, chemical conglomerates Dow Chemical Company and DuPont both made big bets on their farm businesses over the past couple of years, but their fortunes have diverged dramatically. While DuPont is growing ever more dependent on its farm business, Dow said on Thursday it may exit the business altogether. And analysts touted DuPont and Monsanto Company as potential buyers. To be sure, the agriculture industry is struggling to cope with falling crop prices and weak demand for crop protection products, which has led to falling sales in the farm businesses at both Dow and DuPont. But analysts say that while DuPont's fortunes could turn as the industries recover, Dow is also struggling with more company-specific problems at its seed business. These issues, which include a poor distribution network, a limited variety of hybrids, and high R&D cost, would not hinder companies with a bigger scale, and they could even benefit from Dow's R&D capability and the robust pipeline of new products. Monsanto, the world's largest seed company, is looking for acquisitions after its failed $47 billion bid for Syngenta. But Dow's agriscience business is no match to Syngenta. It's only half the size, and its seed business lags far behind. For DuPont, however, buying Dow's farm business would give it the scale to compete with bigger players, especially in the crop protection marketplace. Let's stay with DuPont. There's not been a lot of fanfare about its Nevada-Iowa cellulosic ethanol plant. It's gone online, or is expected to go online, at the end of this month. The company is extremely excited about providing what it considers a truly renewable, sustainable fuel supply in the United States and in the world that is more distributed rather than concentrated in single large fossil facilities. The new plant is expected to use corn stover. The company is licensing the proprietary technology for cellulosic ethanol production facilities internationally, including to China, but additional U.S. cellulosic ethanol investment is clouded. Well, let's stay with energy for the moment. With more than 1,600 megawatts of new wind capacity installed during the third quarter of 2015 and nearly 3,600 installed in all of 2015, wind power continues to gain strength. The release of the American Wind Energy Association's U.S. Wind Industry Third Quarter 2015 Market Report shows the market for low-cost wind energy continues to expand, with both Fortune 500 companies and American cities choosing to cut carbon pollution and cut cost with American wind power. The U.S. Senate Finance Committee voted in May by a strong bipartisan margin of 23-3 for a tax extenders package that includes an extension of the primary federal tax incentives for expanding renewable electricity generation. However, Congress has yet to pass the bill, leaving the production tax credit and investment tax credit in doubt and making it extremely difficult to plan further investments in wind energy. Last month, over 2,000 business voices urged Congress to extend the federal tax provisions. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The old adage that the cure for high prices is high prices sure looks right for the beef market this year. The price of beef cattle reached a record high of about $170 for 100 pounds back in late 2014 and early 2015. It's plummeted since, dropping something like $50. Interestingly, hogs took a similar nosedive from mid-last year to this year. And it sure looks like the price of eggs, which skyrocketed last spring because of avian influenza, is destined for the same fate. Or so thinks Purdue Extension agricultural economist Chris Hurt. He says it's all part of agriculture's boom-bust cycle.
When analysts look back on these boom and bust price cycles, the supply and demand data never seem to quite fully justify how prices go in a period of shortage, nor how quickly they fall afterward. The tendency for prices to overshoot on the upside and then to undershoot on the downside seems to be repeated often. The excesses on the upside may be related to the human emotion that is inherent in agricultural markets when there is uncertainty with regard to food shortages. But regardless, cattle markets seemingly have overshot to the upside and then had to undershoot to the downside, but now are seeking to find a better equilibrium.
Certainly, some of the roller coaster price action in the cattle markets can be explained by basic supply and demand relationships captured by the statement the cure for high prices is high prices, says Chris Hurt. Here's how that has happened in the beef market. With higher cattle weights, sharper increases in beef imports, declining beef exports, and by consumption shifts due to high retail beef prices.
Retail beef prices probably have also contributed to what became the record drop in finished cattle prices this year. Retail beef prices rose to a high of $6.42 a pound in May. Now, those are USDA estimates. These record high prices sent signals to consumers to consider looking for beef substitutes. And they found them in growing pork supplies that were declining in price at that time, and abundant chicken supplies at prices that were similar to last year. Again, given time, high prices provide a cure for high prices on the demand side as well as on the supply side of our industries.
After cattle prices have seemingly overshot and undershot the market, it's now attempting to find the correct equilibrium. Of course, that correct price is never known, and one of the primary functions of the markets is to discover it.
If we look at current futures prices as a forecast, those suggest a strong recovery will occur into the end of 2015, with prices of finished cattle getting back into the low 140s. Then prices would be expected to reach their 2016 highs in the very late winter or early spring, maybe something in the mid to higher 140s. Seasonal weakness next spring and summer then would drop prices back into the mid to higher 130s by the end of the summer. Most likely, the highest cattle prices on this cattle cycle are already behind us.
Finished cattle averaged about $155 in 2014. They're expected to be about $150 on average in 2015, and a much more moderate $130 to maybe the low $140s for the 2016 year. Meanwhile, high prices are continuing to do their job of stimulating expansion of the cow herd, with female slaughter, that's heifers and cows, so far this year down 10%. Indeed, given enough time, thinks the Purdue agricultural economist, high prices will solve the dilemma of high prices. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Let's check the cash grain market. Greg Johnson is here from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Hi, Greg. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Todd. I'm doing well.
Things calming down there at the Andersons?
Yes, we've still got a handful of people running, trying to get done ahead of this rain tomorrow. A few will get done, a few will have to wait until after the rain, but as dry as it's been, I don't think an inch of rain will keep us out of the field very long anyway, so we're hoping to finish everybody up this week.
I take it your pile probably got as big as it was ever going to get this year and shrinking at this point?
It's as big as it's ever been, that's correct, and we haven't started picking it up yet. We're waiting on trains, but that's the next project, is to start picking up piles and getting it loaded out. And
to this point, you have not had a problem getting hold of trains. Any expectations that will change?
No. We're kind of right in the perfect spot here in central Illinois. The crop is terrible to the east, and so they don't need trains. They just barely filled up, if that, to the east. And to the west, they're still harvesting and are in the process of filling up. So we're in good shape. We're able to get trains, and we intend to take advantage of that and keep loading out trains, take advantage of these good basis levels.
Yeah, tell me about them, please.
Well, farmers want $4 corn, and we're not to $4 yet. The market in general knows there's plenty of corn out there. It's just in the wrong places. It's in the west and not in the east. And so we're in the process of trying to get corn to move from where it is to where it ain't, as they always say. So we're trying to get corn to move from the west to the east, and the best way to do that is to get basis levels. So we've got high basis levels in the east, low basis levels in the west, and now we're in the process of getting trains to move from west to east, trucks to move from west to east to get the grain to where it needs to be. So we're taking advantage of some very, very good basis levels here in central Illinois.
This is a bigger task this year than it has been in recent years. I think it was maybe 2010 when Ohio just didn't produce very much, but it's a much larger area from Missouri all the way into Ohio this year. So expectations for those bases to stay strong for the season?
Well, it's rallied. I think we started the fall harvest at 15 under, and we are now 5 over. So basis has improved 20 cents in just a matter of weeks. I think the biggest moves have taken place, not to say that we can't see another 5 cents, you know, at some point in time, but, you know, they are trying to, I think they've got some rail rates figured out so that they can start railing in corn from Iowa, Minnesota, some of those big surplus areas into the deficit areas. So I think there is a limit as to how high this basis can go, and not that we're there yet, but I think we're getting pretty close.
Thanks so much. That, of course, is Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
It's National Mincemeat Pie Day. The origin of the mincemeat pie goes back to the Middle Ages, where chopped liver, boiled egg yolks, dried fruit, and spices were wrapped in a fried or baked pastry. By the 16th century, the mincemeat pie was considered a Christmas specialty. On this day in agricultural history in 1825, the 363-mile-long Erie Canal was finished. Connecting the Great Lakes to the Hudson River and Albany, it provided a water route from the Great Lakes to New York City and the Atlantic Ocean, and began the Great Canal Building era in the U.S.
Canal boats facilitated exchange of manufactured goods from the city with agricultural products from the Midwest. In 1854, Charles William Post was born. An American industrialist, he founded Post Cereal Company and created Grape Nuts Cereal. Post was being treated at the sanitarium of John Harvey Kellogg, where he was fed a grain-intensive vegetarian diet. That provided the inspiration for the manufacture of Postum, a grain product intended as a coffee substitute. 1 year later, Post followed that up with Grape Nuts, and 7 years later, he added Elijah's Manna to the lineup. That cereal is known today as Post Toasties. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Hope you picked up your tickets to our Farm Assets Conference. Just $30 on the 24th day of November. If not, you can do that online at farmassetsconference.com or by dialing 800-898-1065. Let's talk about the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark. That's a new name. You were with Earth Risk Technologies the last couple of weeks. What happened?
That's a mouthful there, Todd. Well, thanks, Todd. And yeah, just a brief background. Actually, Earth Risk Technologies, we merged with Risk Pulse, which is a company based out of Austin, Texas, a software or technology company that supported logistics and overall supply chain risk management. So now we're basically just combining resources. And so not only do we support agriculture and energy trading and risk management, but also logistics and supply chain risk management as well.
And so it's about knowing what the weather is and where we should have the supplies, but how to move that logistically from one point on the planet to the other then.
Exactly. Especially not just looking at one location, but the path or the lane between between endpoints.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Okay, so now tell me about what you've been watching on the agricultural front this week.
Yeah, well, here domestically, the main item of news is the increase in rainfall across the Plains hard red winter wheat belt and the Midwest soft red belt. Obviously, it's been quite a dry fall up to this point across much of the central U.S., and that began to change, especially with the heavy rain event. Some of that is associated with what was Hurricane Patricia that moved into Mexico. Some of that moisture just created big-time rains across areas of the Plains as well as into the Midwest. As well. And actually some of that here in the Midwest will be over the next couple of days. While we are seeing an increase in rainfall, we're still not seeing any sign of a turn to a colder than normal pattern across anywhere in the central and eastern U.S. And so it looks like the mild weather continues over the next few weeks, just continuing this stretch of unseasonably warm temperatures that prevailed for quite some time.
Tell me about Patricia and the problems it's created in Mexico and then, of course, into the Southwest.
Yeah, well, the main effect of Patricia in Mexico was really by the point of landfall, at least in the eye of the storm. That's where we saw the most catastrophic damage, the strongest winds, heavier rainfall, resulting in mudslides. But as the system quickly weakened, it lost a lot of its punch. So interior sections of Mexico did not get that much rainfall, except in a few isolated areas. But then as the remnant circulation came across Mexico and moved into the northwest Gulf of Mexico, Texas region, it was able to draw up more moisture again. And that's what helped produce the very heavy rainfall and flash flooding across the South.
Thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate you being with us. Mark Russo, of course, is with Risk Pulse. He's out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.